If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My favorite part of that Star Wars one is the Chewbacca voice they do. It kills me.
Yeah. The Chewbacca animation is pretty funny, too.
Yeah. The part where Vader goes into the ship at the beginning and starts smearing them against the walls.
Yeah.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast, Season 6, Episode 55. It's the season finale of Season 6. Finally, it's arrived. Yay! Woo-hoo. My name is Tim. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm also joined by Jonathan Kuhlein, who is Mississauga, Ontario.
I am Mississauga. Hello there, kids.
All righty, yes. And once again, Jaime is traveling the world, so he'll have to listen to this like the rest of you and shake his fist. Anyway, quick fact check from last week. The show I couldn't remember the name of was The Enterprise Incident, which is, I'm surprising I couldn't remember that. That's the one where I was talking about the tropes of, Strange New Worlds doing the Vulcan, turning into Vulcans. Well, this is the one where he goes in and has his ears and his eyebrows surgically altered to make him look like a Romulan Kirk. And that's when Spock is down being wooed by the female commander. And she's trying to get him to join, and bring all these Starfleet secrets with him. Meanwhile, Kirk dresses up as a Romulan commander and goes and steals the cloaking device, which is what the whole purpose of that's what the Enterprise incident is. And that's it. So we'll jump over to the headlines, and Jonathan's got a few, and I got a few. Mm-hmm. So what you got?
Yeah, we'll start off with some Star Trek stuff, but unfortunately some sad Star Trek stuff. So the actress Patty, I'm going to say this right, Patty Yasutake died this week of cancer. She is not somebody I think we know by a household name, but she's somebody who definitely had a big role in the Star Trek The Next Generation. She played Nurse Ogawa, who was sort of the second in command to the medical bay, along with Dr. Crusher and Dr. Pulaski. She appeared in 16 episodes of the show, although if you'd asked me, I would have said more, just because she was one of those very familiar faces. She sort of started off as a, you know, a couple of lines here and a couple of lines there. But then, you know, towards the end of the run, she definitely had some more appearances.
She's also in two of the movies, I think, too, right?
Yeah, she was definitely a presence for sure. Yeah, she was in Generations and and First Contact. She was definitely a face that we knew and was definitely, it's funny because, you know, in the era of Lower Decks, she was part of that original
Lower Decks episode. I was going to say, she was a Lower Deck person, right? Yeah, yeah.
She was. She was in that episode titled Lower Decks, where was the inspiration, obviously, for the concept of these are the people who kind of run things when the rest of the main crew are doing other things. And yeah, she was definitely one of those people that was a recognizable face for Star Trek fans for a number of years, and obviously very sad to hear that she's passed away. But I will say, and I've got it in our show notes, so please have a look. There's a lovely piece on StarTrek.com this week about how the character of Nurse Ogawa paved the road for Asian American women, and talked about just her role and how it evolved and how she was a strong character. And yeah, it's a really nice piece by the writer's name is Christine Din, and just sort of highlighting that this, you know, representation matters, and that this was an important role. In 1987, there weren't a lot of, you know, good representations. She was a very small minority of Star Trek characters were Asian. And so it was really nice to see that she got some recognition out of that. So, yeah, obviously very sad to hear of her passing, but what a nice tribute they've got up on their site right now. Definitely recommend you have a look at that.
Cool. Yeah, good. She will be missed.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a regular character that, you know, even like you said, she doesn't jump out, but you kind of expect she was like a fixture in the medical bay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right.
Moving on to something we will definitely talk about as we get to the main part of our show, House of the Dragon. The news came out this week that House of the Dragon is going to be a 4-season show. So as they wrapped up their second season, and we will talk about that in a few minutes, they have announced that they're going to do season 3 starting next year. They're going to start filming. So the expectation is we're going to see season 3 come in 2026, and then probably season 4 in 2028. And that will be the entire sum total of the Targaryen Civil War. So wrap your head around the fact that we have now watched 18 episodes of this series, and that is half. And there's also in this story that I've pulled from Variety, it mentions that the expectation, though not confirmed, is that the episode count from this season will be the episode count going forward. So instead of 10 episodes and then 8 and going forward, we were kind of hoping, I think, that it would go back up to 10. They seem to be thinking that it's going to be another 8 and then another 8. Although, in fairness, those episodes were decently long. We'll talk a little bit in our main part of the show about some of the reasons behind that, because it kind of ties into the season finale and what we got there. So stay tuned. And it's going to work out nicely, too, because the teaser trailer that HBO aired on Sunday night with House of the Dragon season 2 finale highlighted that in 2025, we're going to get the second Game of Thrones spinoff series that is coming, and it's going to be coming in 2025. I think the idea would be that basically there'll be a new show every other year from the sort of Game of Thrones universe, which I guess probably makes much more sense, because right now we're looking at like multi-year gaps, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is based on the books, the novellas, Tales of Duncan Egg, is going to fill in that gap. So in 2025, we'll get the first season of that. 26, we'll get season 3 of House of the Dragon, and then it'll go back and forth for a few years. They're also working on other projects. I think this is just part of the long game that HBO's in the Game of Thrones business, and they're just going to keep churning out shows. So yeah, if they're only going to do 4 seasons of one, that's fine, because they'll probably do another 4 seasons of something else as soon as it's done, right?
Right, yeah. Nope. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well keep milking it.
Yeah. Wow. Keep
milking those dragons.
I mean, I think part of HBO's subscription model is based on the fact that they are going to keep churning out Game of Thrones shows.
But I mean, it's funny. Like the one comment about I don't know, but well, maybe we can talk about it during the our review of the season. I guess is and this is a big question for you because I don't usually bring up a question, but is the political intrigue in House of the Dragon as strong as the political intrigue in the Game of Thrones was? You know,
yeah, I mean, I don't think so, just because there's fewer players. Like the best part of Game of Thrones was the fact that, you know, everybody seemed to have their eye on the prize. And the metaphor for the show is, you know, that it's a game, that people are playing this game and you either play to win or you die. And so that made the stakes of the show very high. And there was a lot of different suitors for it. In this case, it's kind of column A and column B, which kind of minimizes the stakes a lot. But it's more personal because it's family, right?
Yep.
Okay, this one, I would like you to reach down and hold onto your socks, for they may fly off your feet, Tim. The Orville. Remember that? Remember the Orville? Remember when we used to talk about the Orville?
There was like only three episodes in the last season that I managed to... I don't think I made it through the third episode, to be honest with you. I think it's just still frozen on my Apple TV going, hey, remember us?
I feel bad about this because Jaime's not here to defend the Orville, which he was definitely much more into than the two of us. But
I think I can speak for Jaime when I say... I don't think it delivered on what the promise was, right? And I think he agreed with that. Last time we talked about the Orville, it kind of just fell flat on its face. But
well, in spite of all that, there is still a fan base that are hardcore.
Of course, people like Galaxy Quest too, right?
Sure. And you know, I'm not going to begrudge people their fandoms. It wasn't for me, but that's fine. That being said, it has been a long time since we've seen anything from the Orville world. So it came as quite a surprise this weekend when Scott Grimes, who is one of the actors on the show, was at an event at Star Trek Las Vegas, and he confirmed that filming on season 4 of the Orville will begin in either January or February of next year. Now, this hasn't been confirmed elsewhere that I've seen, but... he did make this a public announcement, so yeah, I think we now wait to see if there's a formal announcement forthcoming. It's a big gap. I think it's been like 3 years since the last time they did anything related to the Orville. Now, obviously, Seth MacFarlane's got a lot on his plate. He has multiple shows. He's working the movies. He's, you know, all kinds of stuff. But that's a big gap, so it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do for, because even if you'll recall... the gap between season 2 and 3 was a bit, and they decided to dub it New Horizons because they were kind of like, oh, it's a new iteration. So this will be like New Horizons or Newer Horizons.
The next generation, maybe.
The next horizon. But yeah, so stay tuned, kids. If you were a fan of the Orville, it might be on its way back.
Yeah.
I know you're excited, Tim. Calm down.
Well, I mean, it was to be honest, it was a bit sterile, but I guess that's the kind of look they were going for, right? So,
I mean, they were trying to capture some of the magic of old Trek, and I appreciate what they were going for, but it was neither funny enough to be a comedy nor engaging enough to be a great sci-fi show for my taste. It felt very derivative. If they had really leaned into the humor, I think when they did lean in hard on the humor, I enjoyed it more. But it just felt like it was kind of stuck between worlds, and it never really landed for me. Now, again, your mileage may vary. You may enjoy it very much, and here's your enticement. It may be coming back. Now, where it's going to air might cost you a couple more bucks, because Disney is hiking the prices across the board. Oh, yes.
Again?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, yes.
Throw him to the floor. Disney is hiking prices across the board on Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus standalone plans, as well as most bundles. This is an article from Variety. I have not seen how this is going to affect Canada, although I can't imagine if they're going to do this in the States, they wouldn't do it here as well. These price increases are obviously, for the purposes of this, only in the United States. I am waiting for a note to be coming my way from the good folks at Disney Plus about how that's going to affect us here. But yeah, the term that they are using is streamflation. Streamflation is a real thing. They are just constantly seemingly milking more and more out of this thing. I did think it was very funny timing-wise. They announced this. And they also announced that for the first time ever that the Disney Plus model is a profitable enterprise. They announced that at a shareholders meeting this week. So if you'll join me in a large salute, middle fingers up to the good folks at Disney for simultaneously doing that. Yeah, they announced this on Tuesday, and on Wednesday they announced on their Q3 earnings call that they are, in fact, now a profitable enterprise doing Disney Plus. So, and that's out of your pockets and mine. So yes, enjoy.
And the Hulu and the Max, they were acquired sometime in the last little while.
Well, Disney, Hulu,
or merged or whatever.
Hulu, they had a third of, but they acquired a majority share when they bought Fox. Okay. Fox had another portion of that. And then they, I believe, acquired the last portion of that sometime after that. So that is now all theirs. ESPN is part of their ownership of ABC Television and ESPN that they've had for a long time. So again, this is just corporate synergy, really. Disney Plus is something people are subscribing to. They're bundling it with Hulu and ESPN Plus in the States and making it a thing, yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, it's approaching, when you get into the higher-end bundles, it's approaching cable pricing, you know?
It is. It is. Absolutely, yeah, it is. And, you know, of course, the way that they're enticing us now is, well, you know, you can have it cheaper, but we're going to add in commercials. Well, you can have it cheaper, but, you know, you get lower quality. Oh, you know, so you have to decide what your priorities are. I know the Amazon Prime subscription that I use is now that tier is commercial. So they show commercials at the beginning, usually in the middle a few times, and then at the end of things, which is very jarring because that's a new thing that they introduced. And it's basically like, well, if you don't want to pay us an extra, whatever it is, $3-$4 a month, you get to watch commercials. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been on the Threads a lot more than Twitter these days. I spend more time. For some reason, the content on Threads is much nicer, better, friendlier, less. I don't think I've heard of very many, negative, like bad things happening on Threads like they do on Twitter. You know, like if you put an opinion up on Twitter, chances are you're going to get some flaming from people. It could be because the whole thread things, Threads is kind of a walled garden too, isn't it? Like run by Meta and all that.
It stuff, is, yeah. Or, it's affiliated with your Instagram and everything else.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of like background checking on things that goes on, so you may not see some of the negative comments anyway. But I have discovered a few people that I started following on Threads that I just sort of, they randomly came up in the feed and started following them. One of them is Jason Pargan, and he's an American reporter, writer, opinion guy, and he does these little, you know, TikTok type videos. This one was interesting, and the reason why I flagged it for our show is he was talking about in this particular TikTok that I've got listed here, how people who don't like Star Wars like to say that it was ripped off from Flash Gordon. And we've talked about this before on the show. Like one of my problems with the whole renaming of the fourth episode 4 is that it was, to me, it was kind of like George Lucas discovered this lost reel of this serial, and here's episode 4. Like, you know, I often would jump into Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon in the middle, and, you know, and kind of like just, you know, you'd miss the first couple ones. And I know that drives some of the completionists crazy, but you know, you kind of got what you got, right? You would go to the theater to watch a movie, and it would either open with a cartoon, you know, Bugs Bunny or something like that, Looney Tunes, or it would open with like a reel from one of the serials that you, and that it was in a way of getting people to come to the theater more regularly, right? So to complete the episodes. But anyway, so he talks about how, well, of course, Star Wars was ripped off from Flash Gordon. In fact, that George Lucas even tried to buy the rights to Flash Gordon and was turned down by the estate or whoever owned it. So he went back and rejigged, you know, his original script to turn it into episode 4. And but then what's interesting about Flash Gordon is it was also ripped off from Buck Rogers, which was a famous comic at the time, right? And same sort of idea. There were Buck Rogers films as well, I believe. But Buck Rogers was ripped off from Edgar Rice Burroughs' Princess of Mars, surprisingly enough. And and which was also a ripoff of Gulliver of Mars. I've forgotten the author for that one, but the Gulliver from Mars, Gulliver of Mars, was so badly received as a piece of science fiction that the author never wrote another piece of fiction again.
Wow!
Right? Yeah. So it's interesting this sort of, you know, and you know, we've all talked about if we've all dug into the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell sort of story. This is the typical, you know, kind of thing, and a lot of we see these kind of stories come up all the time, you know, like, and you can literally replace Harry Potter with Luke Skywalker with, you know, anything that the guy who did the Look Justice League, what's his name again? That director.
Zack Snyder? You
know, Zack Snyder, yeah. He does a lot of all that kind of stuff too. I mean, well, even, you know, Planet of the Apes are all, they're all sort of the same, you know, hero's journey kind of stuff, but. Yeah, so it's just an interesting piece. So I keep watching him. Jason Pargan, and a couple of other. There's one physicist lady that I watch who does really interesting stuff, and with tongue firmly planted in cheek a lot. And another one who does astrology or not astrology, cosmology, which is kind of fascinating too, right? So. Yeah, so that's a kind of an interesting thread. But I was telling Jonathan just before we started recording today, we discussed Borderlands, which has now, I guess it's now hit the theaters. And what caught my attention, and the reason why I brought it here, is I wanted to point out that when I saw this afternoon, that Borderlands had risen its Rotten Tomatoes scores by 8 points, starting from zero.
Yeah.
As we record, it's at 6. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. There have been some initial reviews that have come out, and it is scathing. I watched the trailer. I must admit, I've never played the Borderlands games. It just wasn't my cup of tea, but I know they're very popular, and I know that there's a fan base for this, and maybe it'll persevere. But the reviews, some of the words that I've seen in the initial review headlines have been, you know, disastrous, unwatchable. You know, that's yikes. That's harsh. So I think we'll see how this one goes. This might be one of those ones that that our fans on Slack will recommend that I have to watch to endure. Yeah. As it comes out sometime in the near future, I'm sure, on streaming. So
I kind of get the impression, remember Tank Girl? I think that was another one that was kind of
I love Tank Girl. Come on.
Do you?
It's based on a comic. That's a good one. Yeah,
well, the book comic's good. I know that, but I gotta go back and watch.
Yeah,
I gotta go back and watch that one, because I remember that being sort of a kind of a weird,
it was certainly sort of, it was, I feel like it was a bit ahead of its time, but it was also, it was super weird. But then so was the comic.
Well, it's like Howard the Duck too. It's kind of just a very different thing, and people weren't really, it wasn't Howard the Duck one of the first Marvel movies to be made, kind of thing.
It was one of the first big Marvel movies to be made, because up until then there was sort of the Roger Corman campy silly ones. This one had George Lucas involved. Like, it was it was a big deal when it happened. It's just, it did not seem to land with many people, which is a shame, because as you know, I love it. So
yes, we know you love it. Got the poster on the wall and everything.
I do. An original one sheet.
Wow. All right. Yeah. So cool. Well, and that brings us to the main part of the show, where we're going to talk about the season finale of season 2 of House of the Dragon. It does feel like we didn't get enough episodes out of this one, but then that's also because of like you mentioned last week, the writer's strike. So the queen who ever was, the title means what?
Well, the queen who never was what they called Princess Rhaenys, who of course was next in line. She should have become the next ruler of the Seven Kingdoms, but because she was a woman, she was denied, and her cousin ended up taking her place. That was Viserys, who was Rhaenyra's father. And of course, as she was the queen who never was, in this one we see sort of this upswell of support around Rhaenyra. We see a lot of people bending their knee to her, and so she is the queen who ever was. My elevator pitch for this one was, budget smudget, where is the war that you promised us? We knew that there was some restrictions.
Well, do I get to give my elevator pitch?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, yes, absolutely.
So my elevator pitch is sort of around a simple simple part of the show, but it's all fun and games until your wife comes home.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And then you will, too, bend the knee.
Yes, you will bend the knee. That's for sure.
So this season was shortened from, I planned 10 episodes to 8 episodes, and I have read online and heard from the showrunner, Ryan Condal, that there were also budget cuts that came with that. So they kind of had to pick their spots a little bit over the course of what they wanted to do in this truncated and financially restricted season. But
yeah, I would expect the torching of that city was probably one of the things they cut, right, from the special effects budget.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of worked around a few things. You know, we got some really cool stuff this season. We got the big dragon battle in episode 4. We got, you know, some really good looking stuff, considering that they did say there were some limitations. I don't feel like what we got was bad at all. But what we didn't get is really what the issue is. So this is now 18 episodes in, 16 episodes to go, and we have not seen one major battle yet. Now, this episode does its very best to get you psyched for those things, and I'm sure when you go back and watch it as one big binge of 4 seasons of it, I'm sure it'll be fine. But when you get to the end of this season and the whole thing is just more people talking at each other and dragons in the background and no actual battles, even though this has been promised as, you know, the Dance of the Dragons and the civil war between the Targaryens, and this is the whole thing. We went through this whole episode. It was a good episode. There was lots of good things to like out of it, but all they did was set the stage for a bunch of stuff that is coming. And ultimately, I'm not sure that's satisfying.
Yeah. Well, that's what I sort of said to you on the weekend. It was kind of a what was the term I used? Yeah, it'll come back to me. But it went out with a whimper, you know what I mean, kind of thing, right? Like,
yeah. Well, it's a good indication that for my best pew 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 for this episode, I had not applicable.
Yeah. Maybe the guy with the bad manners at the table was the one guy, right?
Yeah. More little birds.
Yeah. Yeah. And the queen is talking.
Yeah. When the queen stands up and holds her glass, maybe don't ask for more food.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
No, and again, I don't want to get too hard after it. I think, yes, it was disappointing we didn't get, especially because they have been building up. All these armies have been marching. They've been over and over again telling us, oh, well, the Hightowers are coming from here, and the Lannisters are coming from here, and the Northmen are coming from here, and that they made these deals, and these armies are all converging, and you know, oh, and we've got more dragons in the mix now, and they just kept hyping it up, and then we're basically like, oh, and we've got the sea battle ready to go, and we've got this land battle ready to go, and oh, this dragon's ready to take on this dragon. I'm like, cool, stop talking about it and show it to
me. Maybe the writers should go watch the Napoleon movie, because I mean, there's got to be 5 major battles in that movie.
I'm guessing the budget for that was pretty good too, though.
Yeah, probably about the same, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
but a lot of CGI, I'm sure, but
yeah. Again, I don't want to take it away from the fact that we had some great moments in this episode. The scene where Rhaenyra finally sort of gets word that Daemon and may be, you know, forming his own army as opposed to building an army for her. And she flies in on her dragon and goes to Harrenhal, and there's this room full of people, and the queen walks into the room and no one bends their knee. And then Daemon gives this little speech where he's like, I get it now. I get why here.
But you forgot to say why he gets it.
Well, that's, yeah.
Yeah, get to that. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that scene was amazing. But you're right. It's basically predicated on the fact that he finally, all of these little moments that he's been having, these visions he's been having at Harrenhal have finally paid off. He gets taken down to the Weirwood Tree by Alys Rivers, and he gets basically a recap of the Game of Thrones 8 season journey. If they'd show that to me, maybe I wouldn't have to watch 8 seasons of the show.
True.
It's also particularly funny because he has this vision that includes Daenerys and her baby dragons, but doesn't seem to include Jon, who is actually the prince who was promised and is actually the last Targaryen in the end. But spoilers if you haven't watched Game of Thrones, but really, if you haven't, why are you listening to us talk about House of the Dragon? Anyways.
Because it's a Star Trek podcast.
That's true. It is. Welcome to Star Trek, House of the Dragon.
Yes.
But yeah, it's in the end, Daemon finally realizes his place. He didn't believe in prophecy. He didn't believe that there was a greater purpose. He kind of just thought this was about the here and the now. Now he gets it. Now he is on board. And now he realizes, exactly what Alice said, which is you are a player in this game. You are not the one playing the game. And that's important. That's an important milestone because now he's back on Team Black. All of those forces are aligned. He's got this army of Rivermen all ready to go. And as I said, it's more stage setting. So when Rhaenyra shows up and sort of says, what have you been up to? Well, I was away. He says, mea culpa, my bad. I'm actually here. I'm on your team. Everyone in this huge room all bends the knee. And, you know,
after he bends his knee, though, yeah, he makes a big point of it, right?
So, again, really good, really satisfying for this. You know, I think we talked about it in previous episodes. This whole thing with Daemon in the Riverlands at Harrenhal is dragged out a lot. I feel like perhaps a little too much, but I'm glad that it at least ended in a satisfying way so that we actually get this payoff in the end. other highlights of this episode. Well, the scenes of Tywin Lannister trying to recruit or more importantly, give large amounts of real estate to the Triarchy in exchange for them joining the efforts to break the sea blockade.
That was good, yeah. That was probably the best pew-pew, the mud battle.
The mud wrestling was pretty good. I mean, did we need to go there three times? Did we need to have all this stuff captured? I mean, I guess it's tricky because, you know, we talked about this. We're only going to get four seasons of this. We got eight seasons of Game of Thrones. It's truncated, so things are moving faster than we're used to and yet slower than we're used to because we kind of thought we'd get more pew-pew-pew in the season. But the fact that they took the time to introduce Lohar, who is a trans character, which is cool, and have him be this character where you get to see what kind of person that he is and you get to, you know, embrace a little bit of this Triarchy culture and this different way of viewing things in Essos, I think is going to serve you well because obviously the way they're setting it up is that in the next season, we're going to get this climactic battle at sea between the Valyrian forces of Corlys and his son, Adam, facing off against the Triarchy, right? So they've kind of set the stage for that. And so now you've got a little more investment where you're like, oh, well, Lohar's a fun, interesting character. Now I care a little bit more about what happens, but it's also, you know, did I need that over any one of these battles actually happening in this episode? No, probably not.
Hmm. Yeah. So Lohar is a trans character?
Yeah, I mean, Lohar is just judging from appearances and is biologically born female, it seems.
Yeah. I see what you mean by that. Okay.
But is presenting male and talks about his wives, so I'm... Again, didn't take 2 + 2 to get very far for me to get to 4. You know, as
well, I would have used another term for it, but that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's I think it's good. It's good. It's good representation because they didn't beat it over the head, but it definitely, you know, paid off in some very enjoyable scenes. This scene at the beginning, and then of course the scene with the mud wrestling, and then the scene where. You know, they're sitting around feasting and singing songs and stuff like that, which were all, you know, again, it was good, some good humor mixed in there. And the Tywin character is pretty hilarious. You know, anytime you can take the piss out of Tywin is a funny one. He's the same one earlier this season who was, you know, had to babysit the princeling at the council meeting in episode 1, right? You know, settle down, Tywin. Come on. We're trying to get work done here, you know. Yeah, no, again, I think there was a lot of stuff to enjoy here. I thought the sort of culminating or second from last scene with another scene between Rhaenyra and Alicent, which I wasn't expecting. I don't think anyone was really expecting them to meet face to face again like this, to have Alicent come to Dragonstone wearing her blue dress, not her green dress, wearing her blue dress, very important. Green is Hightower, blue is the color that she wore when they were friends, back when they would hang around the garden and read books and eat lemon cakes. So she comes back and basically says, you know, I've had an epiphany. My epiphany is this has to end. So I'm willing to throw open the doors to King's Landing for you if you, you know, agree to let me and my family live. And Rhaenyra basically says, you know, you have gone too far. You know, you can't just have everything your way. So we even get Alicent agreeing that she can, she's willing to sacrifice her son, the king.
Is she though? I mean,
well, that's what she says, but then in the end, she doesn't seem to have control over that, because one of the things we see in this very impressive, you know, 5-minute montage to finish the episode is sort of where everything's set up. So we see, you know, we see Tyland and the Triarchy getting out to sea. We see Adam and Corlys going out to sea. We see the armies that are all marching. We see the Northmen crossing at the river where the Freys are. We see Harrenhal. We see all these different setups. And
the young girl gets the big dragon too.
That's right. Well, she meets him anyways.
Yeah. Well, she didn't get burned, so
she didn't get burned yet. So that's good. So yeah, she. So we see Rhaena meet Sheepstealer, and we also get Aegon and Laerys in the back of a cart leaving King's Landing. So they're pieced out. So it will be interesting to see how these things all come together as far as the next season. But they have done a masterful job of setting the stage. I just wish they had set the stage and delivered a performance before we bid them adieu until 2026.
Yeah, at least something, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's such a long wait.
Like a dragon needs to fall, and then we have to wait till next season to find out what the result was. Like they did with the king, you know, when he got toasted, right?
Yeah, as I say, the stage is set nicely, and I'm sure it's going to pay off. You know, I'll fast forward ahead to my big question. My big question is next season all crunch berries, which is to say, are we finally just going to get banger after banger after banger of episodes? Are we going to get, you know, oh, there's this huge sea battle. Oh, there's this huge land battle. Oh, they fight for King's Landing. Oh, you know, Daemon versus, you know, Aemon.
Like, this is all if this show doesn't get canceled between now and then, too,
wow,
right?
There's just no way. this is their business now. The HBO's business model is we do Game of Thrones and some other stuff, because this is what makes them the most eyeballs. So I don't think there's a risk of that. I think the biggest risk is budget cuts, because it's, you know, Ryan Condal was saying, he's the showrunner, was saying, you know, yeah, we were dealing with some stuff. That's why we had to sort of do what we did. That's why we didn't do these things, because again, the next things they're going to do are, yeah, a massive sea battle, a massive battle filled with extras and explosions and flames. We're going to do this, like, you know, all these different things that they've set up are all big budget stuff, because you have to animate dragons. You have to, you know, cast thousands of extras. You have to blow up ships. You have to, you know, all those things cost a ton of money to make. And so I think what we really need to hope for as fans is they don't skimp and they don't cut any more corners, because this was a really enjoyable season that kind of, as you said, I think you nailed it, Tim. It went out with a whimper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did flag a couple of quotes, which I
got some too.
Yeah. It's best to live, I think, however you do it. This is Laerys talking to Aegon, saying basically, like, you know, don't give up on anything yet. You don't want to die. Keep going.
You don't have to die on your sword. Yeah. That's where it fall on your sword, I should say.
The two best ones, and we didn't talk about the scene, but the scene between Kristen and Gawain was a banger, because Kristen is sitting there sniffing the handkerchief that Alicent pulled out of her breast, you know, in the previous episode, and Gawain is like, ew, dude, that's my sister. And they have this, you know, sort of scrap, and you realize just Kristen has become a much more interesting character since he saw the dragons fight. You know, he's much more like, you know, thinking deep thoughts and not just such a vacuous bugger. But he got two bangers out in here. Perhaps all men are corrupt and true honor is I must have gotten the word wrong. Perhaps all men are corrupt and true honor is a mist that melts in the morning. A mist that melts in the morning. That was very eloquent. Beautiful writing by whoever did that for the show. But my favorite by far is desire for women has brought me grief after grief. I feel like most men should have that tattooed on them somewhere.
Yeah, the one I caught from the same speech was the dragons dance and the men are just dust under their feet.
Yeah. I think that's a metaphor for, you know, his journey this season, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I got one from Matt Smith too, when the dude comes to check on him.
Mm.
And he says, you know, we've been trying to get her to do what we want, but she won't. She keeps, you know, she's not listening to us. So maybe we'd be better off with you as a king. Not in so many words, right? And Matt Smith looks at him and goes, I never suspected you as a turncloak.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was a funny scene where they go down to the God's Wood and you hear the trees whisper, traitor.
What do they whisper?
The trees, and when he goes down to the God's Wood, they whisper traitor.
Oh, do they? Oh.
Yeah, which is like, woof, you know, when the trees are calling you a traitor.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. Did you hear the word traitor? Because it sounded like traitor. I did like in that scene, too, where everyone bends the knee because he's just like, you know, soiling his armor because he's like, uh-oh, if she makes nice with him and Daemon and Rhaenyra are back together, I'm going to be in a pile of doo-doo here.
Yeah, he does bend his knee last, if I recall correctly, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And that was after, again, like I said, you know, the scene where the face-off between Rhaenyra and Daemon, she's expecting him to say, you know, I've got an army and I don't need you kind of thing, whatever. Mm. I'm going to be the king and you're going to just be the queen or whatever.
Yeah.
Because at one point, I think in an earlier episode, he talks about that she would take her rightful place beside him, right?
Yeah, that's how he had positioned himself until he had finally had this sort of breakthrough.
The vision. The dragons.
So.
And the winter coming and what was the name of that white guy? The Night King. Night King, yeah.
Yeah.
Once you saw him.
Yeah, I mean, there was all kinds of little Easter eggs in there, too. Mm-hmm. He saw the three-eyed raven, so he saw, you know, that's, of course, something from Game of Thrones. He saw, you know, the Night King, and then he also saw, you know, Dany and the...
In the fire, yeah.
In the fire, you know, with the baby dragons. And then there was a couple things that they are book spoilers, but there was a couple more things, if you go back and watch that scene, that will foretell the future. And not the future of Game of Thrones, but the future of House of the Dragon. So interesting stuff in there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I would recommend that if you have, I don't know, say 2 years to kill, that Fire and Blood, the story of the Targaryens, is available at your local bookstore and or on Audible and or on any other.
Well, when did he write that? Because isn't he supposed to finish the House of the Game of Thrones book?
He is. So he wrote that a number of years ago, probably 10 years ago. He wrote this. As just like an
interstitial. As a plan, as a sort of like Asimov did, where he would build the universe.
Yeah, this was more backstory. Basically, he had all kinds of backstory that he had written for the Targaryens, you know, leading into Game of Thrones, and so basically he just packaged that as a history book, and then that.
Yeah, because in Blood. The Game of Thrones, there's that myth about Jon Snow's mother, right? So. The sister of the one guy, whatever.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of sort of foretellings and prophecies and all kinds of stuff in Fire and Blood that sort of foretell where this is all going for the Targaryens over the course of time and everything. But that being said, it's not a faithful adaptation one way or the other. Like the show is doing things that aren't in the book, and the book does things that aren't in the show. The show has got a lot of that Rashomon unreliable narrator stuff. So I tend to view the show as more of the, like, what really happened version as opposed to the skewed version. Because we actually get, like, it actually says in Fire and Blood, this was so-and-so, this is how so-and-so recalled it happening. This is how so-and-so recalled it happening.
After several meads, right?
Well, that's it, right? So, you know, and of course, everyone has their biases and whatever. So and
everybody remembers things the way they want to remember,
sure. So I think... The show, like these meetings that we've had, multiple two meetings this season between Alicent and Rhaenyra, none of that's in the books.
Yeah, they never happened in the book, right?
But they're fantastic. Yeah. Like those two actresses are incredible together. They have so much chemistry, and they're such good actors that those scenes are amongst the best we've seen all season. It's, you know, like I don't care that they aren't in the book. I think they really enhance the story, and I think the way that they tie those two characters together is much more interesting to me than some of the other accounts that are in the book. So, if you want the broad strokes of what sort of where this is going or, you know, some more details in the stuff, there's lots of cool stuff in the book. Obviously, if you just want to enjoy the show for the show, we'll see in 2026.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, I was thinking about that scene, the last scene with Rhaenyra and Alicent, where like having watched the Queen of England, you know, Elizabeth throughout her career. And then having watched, you know, such shows like The Crown and other movies where they explore or they try to explore the House of Windsor, for example, in terms of how it works and how it ticks. And it's very much pomp and circumstance and ceremony. And there's all kinds of documentaries about that too. Right. But, the way that, I mean, the way, Rhaenyra reacts, you know, gets up out of bed in the middle of the night and goes and talks to see this, you know, this secret visitor who's showed up and turns out to be Alicent. The way she speaks to her is not how I would expect a royal to speak to somebody, right? Because once you become the head of state, you your comportment is completely different, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, and because, I mean, I don't think, other than the queen, you know, kind of like hanging out with her corgis and her kids and when they went off to the to that castle in Scotland, what they used to go to.
Yeah. Windsor Castle? No,
sorry?
Is that Windsor Castle?
No, it's, oh crap, it'll come back to me in a minute, but there's a place, it's in the, if you watch the Crown show, it's all in there. And
yeah.
It's where they go off and they go hunting and, you know, that the, one of the kids, I can't remember if it's, Will or Charles has to go hunt a big deer, a big buck.
Yeah.
You know, sort of rite of passage kind of thing, which only happens in like super, super rich societies, right?
Of course.
Yeah. But I mean, but just kind of the way the, you know, the, there's a lot of meetings in the Crown show, and a lot of shows. And if you watch movies about prime ministers in Britain, about how the queen and the prime minister meet and talk about things, right? Because she's the head of state and he has to come and report to her all the time, right? And kind of how the new, every time there's a new prime minister, he has to learn the protocol and all that kind of stuff, right? Like you never turn your back on the queen, for example. You don't stand up until she stands up. You don't, like, you know, there's a whole lot of rules around. And I mean, even if Alicent didn't respect Rhaenyra as the true queen, I think she does, right? Why else would she be there in that room? But, you know, how she responds to her as if she was, they're two little 8-year-old kids again, right?
Yeah, sort of thing, it's, right? It's tricky because they are obviously people who have known each other in the show since they were children. So I think there's part of that too. I think you're onto something because they certainly seem to revert to themselves in a much more basic way when they're together. Like they do see each other, not always necessarily as they are, but as they were and who they always have been to each other. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And again,
if this was a Hollywood movie, you know, about a king and queens and whatever, she would have just said, seize her,
yeah,
you know, lock her up, put her in the dungeon, put her in the tower, whatever. I mean, like, why does she let her go? I mean, that's the thing, right? So,
well, because essentially she says, I will turn over the keys. I'll basically throw open the doors to the kingdom. So that's, again, right, stage setting for next season.
Again, power that she doesn't have to do after her second born son kind of hands her the dish towel and says, back in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting
to
see.
No offense to women, but that's what he does. Well, that's basically
essentially what he says. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's, oh no, I, you know, sided with the misogynist. I can't believe they're being misogynistic. Like, yeah. Amazing how that worked out. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens next season, obviously, because the deal that they basically came to is, I will throw open the doors for you. And Rhaenyra says, cool, I'm going to behead Aegon. And Alicent reluctantly says, okay, you know, if that's what it takes, at least the rest of us will, you know.
Well, because I love the point that she makes, you know, she says, you realize that in order for this debate to end, I have to kill your son.
Yeah. And she, right, and she does agree to it, but what is going to happen in season three when, if this comes to pass and she shows up at the gates of King's Landing and Alicent throws open the doors and says, oh, by the way, Aegon left.
Yeah.
Is Rhaenyra going to be like...
So the question too is, did she know that he left? Or did, I mean, because I know they kind of skulk off under...
I get the feeling that was actually that was kind of between Larys and Aegon. I don't get the impression there was anyone else in on that deal, because it seemed like Larys has kind of been working the king the last few episodes.
Well, you know, yeah, he's been working whoever's in control, right?
Well, so, he has, and he realized he can't do it to Aemond, right? Because Aemond basically spike volleyed him like a volleyball a couple episodes back and was like, you're a lickspittle and I want nothing to do with you. And he's like, okay, I'm gonna go check in with my homie the king and see what's going on.
Well, because the king, when the king was whole, he did say at some point, you know, I my father never needed a master of whispers, but I think I do, right?
Yeah.
We'll have to see how that turns out.
We'll see. We'll see what comes of it. And we'll check in with Jaime when we return for our next season.
But in terms of feels, right? Like, I mean, you know, Aegon and Laris kind of skulking off into the night. I don't care, like, what happens to them now, right? I mean, whereas I kind of do wonder what happened to Rhaenyra's first husband, who goes off to wherever he goes off to. But in the same sense that, you know, when Maisie Williams' character leaves and goes and studies with that guy to the...
The House of the Undying, yeah. Or it's the Faithless Man, right?
Yeah, the man who has no face or whatever, yeah. Him. I love that character. But he's kind of like a Carlos Castaneda's kind of, you know, guru. But and the journey of Brienne of Tar, right? She kind of like just, you know, her sort of wanting to be, you know, a knight and not being able to be a knight because they were a very misogynistic society.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
well, and even though one of my favorites was the Hound, right? You know.
Yeah. His sort of, I mean, all these sort of arcs. I mean, like, they had all these arcs that you're interested in. I mean, I'm interested in the Matt Smith character. I'm actually interested in the young lord who's, you know, inherited the one that inherited from his grandsire. He's an interesting character. Laris is an interesting character, but you know, I care more about Laris than I do about, and the White Worm. I like her too.
Yeah.
You know. But in terms of like, I mean, not kind of liking, I mean, like, I like the arcs that they're on, the stories that they're on.
If you'd asked me after season one, I would have said Kristen Cole is a very one-dimensional, one-note character, but he's come a long way too. Like, they've, you know, that's the catch-22 of the season. There hasn't been
so much. So I want to go back on our own season here because, you know, a few episodes back, you really lit into him. Whereas from my perspective, he was kind of like, he was like her guard whose sworn duty was to protect her and, you know, and to be chased and all that kind of stuff as all of those guards are supposed to be, right?
Well, back up, Alicent or are we talking about Rhaenyra? Because he was Rhaenyra's sworn sword first.
Oh, yeah. Well, he has a relationship with both of them, right?
Well, he sleeps with Rhaenyra and then
he
is basically more concerned with his honor. In the end, and is basically like, well, we have to run away together. And she's like, no, I'm the queen. I'm not running away with you. But why don't we just keep up our relationship? And he's like, no, you've besmirched my honor. And then he proceeds to murder a queer character at the queen's wedding. How in the world he doesn't, like, that part is different from the book. In the book, he kills the same character, but he does it during a celebratory tournament. He goes too hard and he kills this guy. And yes, they're the same sort of allusions that maybe he killed him for a reason, but it's not like in the middle of the queen and prince or the princess and princess's wedding feast, which is what it is in the show. If he did that, there's no way even Viserys, who is non-conflictory, wouldn't be like, okay, that guy's got to die today.
Yeah, but so back up on that, he kills that guy because he comes onto him, right?
No, he kills that guy because that guy comes over and basically says, I figured out your secret. You're sleeping with the princess. I'm sleeping with the prince. And you and I should be buddies because we have a vested interest in the two of them being happy. And Kristen is angry.
He wipes the floor with that guy.
Yeah, he's so angry literally. That he feels like his honor has been besmirched, that he basically murders, this is Joffrey, who is Laenor's lover. And then he's about to kill himself in the Godswood at the end of that episode, and Alicent says, no, don't do it. And then the two of them become buddies, and he decides, oh no, I'm going to swear my sword to the queen. And so he does that instead. And then, of course, being the hypocrites that they both are, once Viserys has died, the two of them end up in bed together and end up having a relationship. So he betrays his position again. But worse than that, and it was one of the best lines that we didn't talk about from this episode, is when Rhaenyra says, you know, Alicent says basically like, you did the same things I did. And Rhaenyra says, yeah, but I didn't hold myself up as this paragon of virtue. and then do it. I never said I was perfect. You have been sitting around wearing the seven-pointed star of, you know, the gods and painting yourself as this virtuous person and then doing all this stuff. You're a hypocrite. And that's exactly what Kristen is, too. That was my point a few episodes ago, is that both of them are huge hypocrites.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he's a good person. I genuinely don't. I think he's had an epiphany since, and they've done a good job. And again, credit to the writers and credit to Fabian Frankel as the actor who portrays Kristen. I think they've brought him around to being a much more compelling character in the second half of this season. But that doesn't change the fact that he's also just an absolute monster. He is a murderer. He is doing things out of petty vengeance, and he is, you know, not a good person. He just happens to have found himself in a situation where he's realized, oh, I've been part of opening this door and now I can't close it and we're all screwed.
Right, right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to talk a little Time Bandits?
Yeah, let's talk about Time Bandits.
So two more episodes this week. We got episodes 5 and 6. So we got episode 5, which was Georgian. And then we got episode 6, which is Menace Musa, which was the Mansa Musa. That's the king that they meet, the African king. Good episodes. They were, you know, they definitely are finding their rhythm, I feel like. They were funny. They moved briskly. The dialogue is sharp. The visuals are good. Although this is sort of where the show is a challenge, because they are going to do 10 episodes. And we kind of know the end game of this based on having seen the movie, but also we know the end game of this based on what they do. They go from place to place. They meet famous people and they interact with them, and then they move on to the next place. So the setup for this, the first sort of 2 or 3 episodes, are really kind of getting used to each other, meeting the characters, understanding what's going on. And then we sort of settle into this middle run of, you know, episodes sort of 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe even 7, where we're kind of just with the gang going on adventures, getting to know who's who and what's going on. And then we're going to build towards this sort of, obviously, the ending where they're trying to figure out, you know, what to do about pure evil and the Supreme Being. These were good and I enjoyed them, but it also felt like they didn't really move the plot forward a ton.
No, and there was a bit of a parallel for the Manas Musa episode to the Sean Connery character, yep. And how, yep, he wants to adopt Kevin, yep, right? Because that kind of sort of does come up here. Yeah, and the other one felt a little bit more. The Georgian one felt a little bit. I think probably just having seen Doctor Who do the same thing. Yeah. That reminded me of a Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, it did right from the last season. You're right.
Yeah, well, not just from that last season, but that's kind of thing. You know, like, because Doctor Who travels through time and meets these famous people, mm-hmm, and like in this case, it's the Earl of Sandwich that they meet, right?
Yes.
And Kevin fact checks him, which I think is great, right?
Yeah. Well, some people and the whole. Think.
And the whole thing about the duel, that actor, I actually got to pull up that actor, because he's in quite a few. He's in, he plays,
Sherlock.
Doesn't he play Sherlock's brother? Yeah, yep. Mycroft, right?
Yep.
But he's a pretty big name to have in, as British actors go, to have in an episode, right? So that's kind of a get, right?
Yeah.
I'm just calling up the episodes here.
So that's Mark Gatiss, and yeah. Mark was actually one of the co-creators of that, of the Sherlock BBC show with Benedict Cumberbatch, Martin Freeman, and he also played Mycroft Holmes in that as well. Yeah, he's a very well-known British actor and also a screenwriter and also, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, he was in Game of Thrones. He's been in all kinds of stuff. He's one of those that guys for us, but he's actually really well-known over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guy who plays the lord that's in Harrenhal, yeah, he's a pretty famous
Sir
actor
Simon,
too.
Yeah, well, he's a real knight. He's a real member of the League. Yeah,
knight of the realm, as it were.
Yes, yeah, yeah. He even gets the shout out in the credits. I think they refer to him as Sir.
Do they? Oh, well, he's an actual knight.
He's playing a Sir, and he is a Sir.
Yeah, yeah.
Good casting. Cool. Good casting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it definitely enjoyable show. I don't know. I still find the actual time bandits in the movie to be more fun because they were all about. I mean, they do bring up the whole idea of stealing a lot in this thing, but I mean, that was the purpose of the time bandits in the first movie was, you know, they got the map so they could go and pillage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, because I guess they didn't get paid enough to make flowers or whatever it was their yeah. assignment was. Right?
Yeah. I like that the show is playing with our expectations and subverting things. I you know, obviously we started with that early when they, you know, they go to visit the ancient, I can't remember, was it Mayans or Aztecs that they visited with, and they're like, oh, they're going to sacrifice you. Like, yeah, no, but history's written by the victors and the conquistadors wrote the history, and actually these people are really cool. And it was the same thing where they even go out of their way in this one where it's, you know, Lisa Kudrow's character sort of says, you know, we'll use Kevin to bore them to sleep and then they'll be so bored. And Kevin goes in and starts talking to them and they're like, you're the most fascinating person in the world, Kevin.
yeah. You should come live here. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I like that they are very much playing, subverting, you know, setting up and then subverting all these expectations. You know, they go to when it was episode 4 where they go to you know, medieval England, and mm-hmm. you know, they're, oh, you know, dragons, and you know, and then of course they're again messing with our expectations, which is really really good. So
except for Kevin, who brought in the big
but yeah, you know, it's a good show and I like it a lot. I you know, it's certainly very enjoyable, and I think that there's lots of fun character moments and everything else. As I say, I'm just in this stretch, I'm trying to just enjoy it for what it is. But you're right, it kind of feels like the middle episodes of a Doctor Who season where you're like, okay, but in the long run, do these episodes really mean much? Like, could you cut 4 of these episodes out and have a pretty concise story? And yeah, you know, again, part of the enjoyment is the journey, not the destination, but these are definitely the journey episodes.
Yeah definitely. Yeah, well, because I mean, but the thing about it is, like, the Time Bandits movie, the original story, you know, they do visit all these famous places, but they do get to a point where, you know, there is the big battle between the two, you know, supreme beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which And that big giant maze thing at one point too. Sorry, my dogs decided to go and yell at the universe. Anyway, I'll try not to let it bother me, but yeah. Should we move on to our watch list?
Sure. Let's bring it in.
All right. So I, we Jonathan and I got together to sort of do an experiment with my Vision Pro to see what would happen if he logged in on it, what access would he have to movies and things. So I was able to sort of watch Inside Out as a result of that in 3D, which was kind of cool. But what really bothered me about Inside Out, I mean, I know it's supposed to be educational about, you know, emotions and how various emotions make us feel and things like that, but I actually found it kind of disturbing as a show, because knowing what I know about, you know, the way the brain works and the way the mind works, and at one point the main character who's emotions these people are, or these characters are controlling, they lose a lot of her, she's moving bordering on psychosis, like, because she's losing grip on some of the realities that make her who she is, right, through, you know, the adventures and the show. I found that very, very strange and very disturbing.
It is, yeah. A little bit. I think you're definitely, definitely one way to look at it, but she's also, I think the idea is that she's in this transitionary moment in her life, right? Where some of the childhood things are being kind of crumbling inside her mind and being replaced with, you know, anxiety, being replaced with, you know, sadness. And, you know, I think when you watch that whole thing, I think it comes around to being, you know, you do lose parts of yourself as you move through your life, but some of those are things that are best left behind. And some of those things are obviously sad that they're gone, but you're not really aware they're gone either. Right.
Well, I mean, at the end of it is that Joy, who's the Amy Poehler character, Joy realizes that there is room for sadness, and she keeps trying to avoid sadness from touching things. Right. and spoiling them, but they do realize that they work better together with a little bit of joy and a little bit of sadness, sort of that, sort of like you said, that yin and yang of life, right?
Yep. Yeah, I must admit, I'm really curious to see part two. I don't think I'm a big enough fan to go see it in the theater, but...
Well, there was a big puberty button, which they didn't press, right?
So. Yeah, and obviously that's the kind of stuff they're going to deal with in the sequel, which is, as we just talked about last week, is doing gangbusters box office business. I'm sure it'll pop
up. The question I have, though, is I would assume that the audience for this is young children, right?
Like, I think it's like most Pixar
things. 8 or 9 year olds?
Yeah, but I think it's like most Pixar things. I think... It works on a lot of levels. Like, that's, I think, what has always been the magic of Pixar, is that you're right. I think you could show this, you know, to my niece who's 9, and I think she would get some stuff out of it, and I think she'd find entertainment and understand some of it. But I think I can watch it as a person who's 50 years old and get something out of it. And I think, you know, I think it just depends on, you know, what layer you're looking at, right? Because there's, you know, again, there's some pretty funny, just goofy, you know, the Lewis Black as anger, and, you know, there's some, you know, Mindy Kaling as disgust, you know, there's some very funny parts of it as well. It's not
and
all...
the imaginary creature too.
Oh, Bing Bong, friend. Yeah.
Yeah, Bing Bong.
Yeah, Richard Kind is Bing Bong, and he's so good. I really enjoyed it. I didn't see that one until after it had come out for a while. I don't recall the circumstances, but I didn't get to see it when it was originally released. I saw it probably a year later, and I was very struck by it. I thought it was a very, very well done movie.
Yeah. Cool. And then, so I started watching, so I think I mentioned to you the other day that I just discovered that Orphan Black has been on AMC for the last little while. And it, you know, on the weekends, they kind of do these end to end where they just play one episode after the other. Mm. And we're only halfway through the season. I think there's 10 episodes. I probably could look it up on the IMDb app while I'm talking. But so I started watching it, and it just sort of like landed on, I think, on episode 3 or 4. And I thought, oh, well, let me just look around on my Rod, because I have a Rogers cable TV. So I went in and looked and see what's in the archives for, you know, the on demand stuff. And I looked around and they were showing the new episode was coming out, but they were showing the last week's episode before that, which is when I kind of flipped the channel and found it. So then I went in and I explored around, and I managed to find all 6 of the episodes and get them loaded up on my PVR so I could sit down and watch them like Jaime style, you know, end to end. We still haven't got the end of them yet. But it's an interesting series, because I was trying to find the glue that kind of holds everything together, and you don't really discover this probably until like the 3rd or 4th episode, but Keira Manning is one of the characters. And if I'd heard her name, I might have went, oh, wait a minute, isn't that who, you know, what's her name? Cause Keira Manning is Sarah Manning. Sarah Manning is the main clone in the original Orphan Black, mm-hmm. right? Played by Tatiana Maslany, amazing performance as all the various clones, because you would swear they're different people. Mm. But Keira is her daughter. She actually has a daughter, and so Keira is, in this story, is now grown up, and she's become a scientist and develops a cloning technology, right, to clone organs for, you know, like liver replacement, kidney replacements, that kind of stuff. And her partner, who is the who's the girl now, that the main character, Christian, the main actress, Christian, help me out.
I know who you mean. It's the one
from that show
from Breaking Bad and from Jessica Jones. I'll look it up.
Christian Ritter,
that's right.
Ritter. we're trying to because that's kind of sort of who you think is the main star of the show. But what's interesting is there's another. So the Christian Ritter thing is, we're going to discover what the deal is with her. She's kind of like in the original Orphan Black, Sarah Manning doesn't know she's a clone until she sees someone who looks exactly like her jump in front of a subway train in the first episode, by the way. So not a big spoiler. And that's when she realizes, hey, what's going on? And it turns out that woman that kills herself was a police officer who she then discovers is down the street from me is the Orphan Black police station. I've got it marked on my map here, on Queen Street there is where they filmed that, but or Eastern Avenue, I think it is. Anyway, but it doesn't matter. She discovers she's a clone, like she doesn't know she's a clone, right? And sort of the Christian Ritter character is a clone and doesn't know she's a clone and starts to unravel all these pieces. It's kind of a mystery thing to sort of put it together, right? And And so there's the, and it flashes forward and back to sort of tell the story of this character, Kira Manning, who's a scientist who develops this stuff. And of course, you know, there's a big, you know, corporation that takes away the technology and does other stuff. They also discover that there's another younger person named Jules who looks a lot like Christian Ritter, the actress, right? And is meant to be a teenage version of the same clone, right? They're both, and they discover they're both printed, right? I'm not giving too much away. There's probably in the first two or three episodes you'll find that out. But which is interesting was, so I kept looking at this Kira Manning, the adult woman who plays the older version of Kira Manning, and it turns out she is an actress named Keeley Hawes, who I kind of wondered, like, I kept looking at her going, how do I know that person? Like, who is she? Was she in Ted Lasso? Yeah, but she's also one of the voices of Lara Croft, and as you know, I played tons of Lara Croft games, right? Yeah. But she played D.I. Alex Drake. I've talked about the two British TV show cop shows about that are based on David Bowie songs, right? Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes. Life on Mars is about a cop from today who ends up in 1975 Britain as an inspector, right? And has to deal with all the sort of like the way the world worked back then, right? And he has to work his way towards he gets a brain injury or something like that. He survives his brain injury by reliving as an inspector in the 70s. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, but D.I. Alex Drake is the next series called Ashes to Ashes. I highly recommend both of these shows, by the way. Where she's a female officer in a 1990s police station. And of course, you know, with all the misogyny that goes on there, like most of her undercover roles is she's the, you know, the streetwalker who has to get, you know, catch the perp because God forbid she should be a proper detective, even though she's a detective inspector, which is what DI stands for. I mean, I found out last couple of weeks ago. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Orphan Black Echoes, just coming back to that, it's similar to similar feel to, remember Continuum? Do you ever watch that one?
No, I never watched that one.
Yeah, so it's got a sort of, you know, made for TV sci-fi, but not your NBC, ABC, you know, CBS style. It's much, you know, it's sort of a Space Channel, yeah, kind of Stargate, AMC Plus,
Doctor Who-y, Stargate-y kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, those are kind of cheesy too. I mean, it's worth watching. I mean, it's intriguing. There's a lot of, wait a minute, hang on a second, what? Yeah. You know, like you clone somebody, they wake up and they know how to speak, they've got like a university education, they know all this stuff, like when did they print that part of the brain, you know, kind of thing, right? So yeah, so it's based on cloning, like they basically are they're printing these cloned people basically from a copy of an actual original person who lived at some point, right? So theoretically, if they're the whole theory behind a clone is you like the dog you had, so you clone it to get a second dog like that. But I don't know that, I mean, they know enough about brain chemistry and the way it works and stuff like that, that you know both of your children are not alike, right? Like, I don't have to explain that to you, right?
Yeah, I'm well aware.
Even though technically they are more or less very close to being the same persons.
As are yours, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, but I mean, that's the reality. The reality is I've learned about the brain, the way the brain works and the way memory works and stuff over the years to learn that no two people working in an office are the same. No two salespeople are the same. No two artists are the same. No two hockey players are the same, you know, kind of thing, right? But, you know, but the theory behind cloning is this mystique around the fact that they're going to be identical, and they very rarely are, but that's the conceit that you have to sort of, you have to suspend that disbelief to watch this show, kind of thing, right? Because how did they come out fully, how come they come out with, like, you know, 5 years worth of hair growth, and even though they just got printed 5 minutes ago, you know, kind of thing.
Well, then now we're into Star Wars cloning. It's starting to get a little mixed up.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can't, I mean, what I'm saying though is if you take the genetic material that makes one person and make another person or dog or horse or sheep out of that same material, I don't think you get the same person or the same entity. You get the same, like, it's like twins. Like, twins are more or less, they're from the same egg, in fact, right? Mm-hmm. And the type of twin I'm talking about is the one where the egg splits, right? Mm-hmm. Although they've both got two different sperm donors, but or sperms making them, but they're more, they're, you know, that's how you get identical twins. They're never identical in terms of people. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So interesting show. I mean, and of course, you know, I've got a 3D printer, so I'm always interested in that kind of technology.
Yeah.
Not that I'm going to print any organs anytime soon, but
if you do, let me know. I mean,
that
could be a good one.
Could use a third layer, could you?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You never know where you're going to need that extra kidney.
Yep. Over to you.
Yeah. So a couple things I've watched, a couple things I'm looking forward to watch. So I watched a miniseries on Netflix that I was curious about called A Good Girl's Guide to Murder. That came out last weekend here. It was a BBC and Netflix co-production, and it had already aired on the BBC.
Is it a series or a movie?
It's a mini-series, so it's six episodes, 45 minutes apiece. So the whole thing is over pretty quickly. It's just a little over 4 hours, which is, I think, the right amount of time to spend on this particular story. It kind of has a Veronica Mars-y kind of vibe in that it is about a teenage sleuth in high school who is trying to piece together this who killed this person in this small town. There's a story. The basic premise is there's a young woman who has gone missing, presumed to be murdered, and her boyfriend confessed to the killing and then killed himself. And she knew them, even though they were 5 years older than her. She knew them from school, and she just never, it never sat right with her. So she decides for a school project to start working on trying to see if all the truth of the case is out there. And basically the show is that. It's her trying to, you know, piece together all these pieces to figure out what actually happened to this girl, what actually happened to her boyfriend, is he really the killer, and all that. And it's, you know, and it serviceably tells that story. It's a good, you know, little whodunit. It's a little thriller. It's set in this little town, it's a fictional town in England, where, you know, again, you know, the community, you'd never think there would be a murder in a community like this, you know. So it kind of plays on the tropes of those kinds of stories. What really elevated it for me was the young star. So we got the main role played, the main role is a character named Pippa, and she is played by Emma Myers. And Emma Myers was Enid on Wednesday. So I don't know if you ever watched the Wednesday series.
Right, yeah.
She's the werewolf girl that shares the room with Wednesday, sort of the...
Yeah.
The yin yang,
always positive.
Always positive. She's got the blonde hair. She's really, you know, excited. She's, you know, she's the opposite of Wednesday. And I really enjoyed her performance in that. So when I saw that this was coming on, I like a good little quick whodunit, and I thought, oh, I really liked her performance. You know, I'll take a chance. She's great. She's really, really good as the lead. And definitely carries the load of the series as the star. Really good supporting cast too. Lots of stuff to enjoy there. So if you're looking for something, again, this doesn't really fit into the sort of sci-fi-ishness of us, but a good, just sort of nice summer watch, a nice, easy whodunit, not too gory, although there are some adult subjects in there. So I don't know, it's great for too young of an audience, which is funny because it's about a high school character, but they do talk about, you know, sexual assault. They do talk about drug use. They do talk about some of that stuff. So it can get a little dark, but it was really enjoyable. And apparently this was a trilogy of books that have been turned into this. So if it is received well, and right now I think it's got like an 86 or 87 on Rotten Tomatoes, if it gets the viewership, they can come back and do a couple more of these too. So I would recommend that one. I like that one a lot. I watched the first couple episodes of Batman Caped Crusader, which we talked about last week. That's the new animated series that is on Amazon Prime. I enjoyed what I watched so far. I've only watched the first three episodes, I guess. They've, you know, taken some liberties. They sort of, you know, they're pushing the story forward. They gender swapped a couple characters, which is always interesting. And certainly, you know, I have no issue with that. So that's fine. The only thing that about it that really, really bothers me is that in so many previous incarnations of Batman over the years, there's this strong bond between Batman and Bruce and Alfred. And in this one, for some reason, they insist upon having both Batman and Bruce call Alfred Pennyworth, which is his last name. You know, Pennyworth, do this, Pennyworth, do that. And I'm like, he just comes off as a jerk. And I don't like that part. Maybe it'll tweak. Maybe that's just something they're doing. But yeah, that one, it's just that one thing is kind of sitting a little wrong with me. But again, I have not finished it yet. Maybe that turns and I won't mind as much. But yeah, it's again, it's fun. It's bright. It does have a lot of echoes of the 1990s animated series, if you're a fan of that. Certainly worth a look, and I'll report back, and when we come back for our next season, I'll update you on the remainder of that. Umbrella Academy season 4 just dropped on Netflix. That's my next watch. Only 6 episodes to wrap up the story. Whether or not that is enough, I don't know, but I am definitely gonna jump into that, and we'll be coming back with a wrap up of that when we return next. And one other thing I wanted to flag was I have been watching this YouTube channel, these animated videos by this duo called Kaz and Junaid. I'll have the link in the show notes. So it's Kaz, C-A-S, and Junaid, J-U-N-A-I-D. They do these very funny, very quick recaps of famous movies. So Star Wars, Avengers, all these kinds of things. And they do it very firmly, tongue-in-cheek. You know, they make light of a lot of the situations, but they're actually also fairly faithful in that they show you a lot of the scenes. They do take some liberties for just for having fun, but they have a very distinctive animation style. There's no dialogue in them. They just use sort of sound effects and little goofy voices and stuff like that to make, you know, exclamations and onomatopoeia, but they're fun. They're super fun. I fell down the rabbit hole. I was telling Tim, I fell down the rabbit hole of those a few days ago and ended up watching a couple hours worth just because they were so silly and so funny. So I would recommend if you're looking for a bit of a tongue-in-cheek poke at the things that we all love so much, the Star Warses and the Marvel movies. There's a great one that they do a good recap of Deadpool 1 and 2 that is definitely worth a watch. Very funny. If you're looking for something just to sit back and turn your brain off and have a laugh, I definitely recommend having a look at those ones.
I do recall posting some of these to our Slack channel a while back too, now that you mention it, because I think there's one on Force Awakens, and there's one on...
Yeah, and there are the like How It Should Have Ended, and there's a bunch of people that do these kinds of things online, but like I said, this one, you know, they recap the entire Star Wars movie in like 4 minutes, but it's just a fun, goofy 4 minutes, but
their approach to how Darth Vader, you know, squishes people is quite different.
Right? Yeah, more like, think pop cans as opposed to slow jokes. Yeah. But yeah,
exactly.
But yeah, it's good. It's really good.
Yep. Enjoyable. Cool. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So if people were in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on the Twitter and the Instagram is @JPKNews, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
Cool. All right. My name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A. And that's where you'll find me on the Twitter machine, on the Instagram machine, on the Mastodon machine, and all that kind of stuff.
What about that Threads machine? What about that Threads machine there?
Oh, yeah, the Threads machine. Yeah, of course, that one, too. That's the one I'm enjoying the most these days. So it's lots of hours spent watching silly things on that and posting them to our Slack channel when I find them.
Yep.
So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, bye, bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
lasted more than a year's worth of episodes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I forgot where the season started. Let's scroll back and have a look.
I feel like it went maybe when it was the previous season of Discovery or something, like a long ways back.
Let's see. I could probably, it's episode 23 was a long time ago. September 8th, looks like. No, can't be. Scrolling. Mm-hmm. Oh, Rawhide. We're down to, season 6 was episode 14. And we are at, what are we at? Season 6. Let's see what we were talking about. Things. JPK, The Foundling.
What show Mandalorian?
Was that? Yeah. Second season, maybe? Third season? I can't remember.
Episode 5.
Okay, we're coming. We're getting close. I sent something elusive elsewhere. Okay, actually, and here we are. Season 6, episode 1. We were talking about, in the main show, Star Trek Picard season 3, episode 1.
Oof. So that was like a year ago, January.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bad Batch. We were talking about season 2 Bad Batch. Last of Us, we were still talking about that.
Yep.
And that's what we did our last Spocky, so yeah, it would have been January.
Did you see the little teaser trailer they put on HBO after House of the Dragon this week?
No.
They put a little, like, this is...
Is it on the Crave?
No, it was only on... you can see it on YouTube. But it's basically, like, what's coming to HBO in 2025. So they showed, like... 25 to 30 seconds of a few different shows. So they showed 25 seconds of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. They showed another 20 seconds of White Lotus season 3, and then they showed another 20 seconds of The Last of Us season 2. Ooh. So there is a brief, just they show you, like, you know, 5 or 6 quick cuts of different scenes, and then you get a close up on what's his name, the lead character, and he basically says, like, one thing, and then they're like, coming in 2025, Last of Us season 2. So we know next year will be a good one, because we are already on tap for that. We're gonna get our next season of Strange New Worlds, we're gonna get our next season of Last of Us, we're gonna get our first season of Knights of the Seven Kingdom, lots of stuff to look forward to.
And the second game of Last of Us, I think, is two different stories, right?
I haven't played the second game yet.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, yep. Spoilers.
Yep. Nope. You're ahead of me.
Yes, sirree, Bob. All right. Anyway, you gotta go find out what the dogs are up to.
Sounds good. All right.
Talk to you later.
Sounds good. See ya.
Okay, bye. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big.